This call is being recorded.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We're recording this presentation for folks because we think that this is a really important issue to talk about and know about. And we're really lucky to have James A. Jacobs with us, Jim Jacobs, to talk about the Title 44 and the kinds of changes that are being proposed to it. Jim Jacobs is a librarian emeritus at the University of California, San Diego. He has more than 40 years of experience working with government information and more than 20 years of experience working with digital information, digital services, and digital library collections. He is a technical consultant and advisor to the Center for Research Libraries in the auditing and certification of digital libraries using the Trusted Repository Audit Checklist, otherwise known as TREC, and related CRL criteria. And he's also a co-founder of Free Government Information, which is findable online at freegovinfo.info. So Jim, thanks so much for being here, and you can take it away.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for your interest in this topic. Today, I'm just going to give a very brief overview of the issues around Title 44 and what you can do to help preserve long-term free public access to government information. You know, I've heard some in the library community say that Title 44 reform is not really that important to most librarians because it only affects the approximately 1% of American libraries that are federal depository libraries. I think that attitude is just horribly wrong because Title 44 contains the only legal guarantee that the federal government will provide its public information for free to the general public. So changing Title 44 has the potential of affecting every library and every citizen in the United States. So here's the situation. The Government Publishing Office, or GPO, and a committee in the House of Representatives have indicated a desire to modify Title 44 of the United States Code. As I already indicated, the reason this is important is that this title includes the only legal guarantee that the government will provide federal government information for free to the general public. The bad news about this is that changes could weaken this law or even prevent long-term free public access to government information. And I'm not using hyperbole when I say that. The stakes for free access to government information and the preservation of digital government information could not be higher. The good news is that if we are vigilant and active, we could actually improve the law so that it mandates and enables long-term preservation of digital government information and strengthens the legal guarantee of free public access to government information. But although the law could be strengthened during this process, the forecast does not look good. Let me explain why with a little background first. As I'm sure you know, the United States Code contains all current federal law as enacted by Congress. Title 44 of the Code contains more than two dozen chapters dealing with public printing and documents. Some of this is old law that includes printing requirements that are out of date in the digital age. But two chapters are particularly relevant to free public access to government information. First, Chapter 19 established the Federal Depository Library Program, or FDLP. It says that government publications will be deposited by GPO into specially designated federal government depository libraries, and that those libraries have to make those publications freely available to the general public. Second, Chapter 41 established GPO's online public access portal, which is currently known as govinfo.gov. Current GPO policy is to make the portal available for free, but the law specifically allows GPO to charge for access to that portal. With that as context, two things have happened over the last several years that affect access to government information in general. First, GPO has, by policy, refused to deposit digital documents into FDLP libraries. And second, almost all government information is now published digitally and not on paper. Together, these two things mean that almost all government information is now provided online and not by FDLP libraries, and that creates two problems. First, almost all government information is provided under a law that allows charging for that information rather than under the law that requires it to be provided for free. Second, while the law requires the government information to be preserved when it is deposited into FDLP libraries, it does not require GPO to preserve the digital information in its digital storage facility. Changes to Title 44 could fix these problems, but it could also make them much worse. And that brings us to the current situation and possible changes to Title 44. We know from past attempts to change Title 44, both successful and unsuccessful, that if we want good changes to the law, we need one or more strong advocates in Congress. Unfortunately, it does not appear that the library community or GPO has such advocates. Indeed, Congress seems to be interested mainly in ways to save money, and GPO has not yet specified publicly what sections of Title 44 it wants to change, or why, or how it would like to change them. So, we are entering a complex political process in a time of hyper-partisan politics without any clear goals or principles. GPO is not providing a guide for change, much less leadership or advocacy. Now, I do want to make clear that the current GPO administration is dedicated to preservation of digital government information and to free public access to it, and it's made some excellent strides in doing these things. The problem is that the law does not require GPO to do these things. Under the current law, all the good work that GPO does in these areas could change with a change of administration and new policies. So, what changes does GPO want to make to Title 44? Unfortunately, my best guess, based on statements that GPO has made, is that GPO will attempt to instantiate into the law some bad GPO policies, and those policies will endanger long-term free public access to government information. These bad policies minimize the role of FDLP libraries and put control of digital government information solely in the hands of GPO. That would increase the danger of the loss of free access, and even worse, the loss of the raw digital government information itself, for two reasons. First, it would put all digital government information at risk of changing congressional priorities. These could be economic, just simple budget cuts, or political, deciding what information to keep or discard, or what information to make free, or what information to put behind the paywall. Second, GPO does not have either the resources or the congressional support or the legal mandate to preserve digital government information permanently or to provide it to the general public for free. Even if Congress does what we hope it will do and changes Chapter 41 so that GPO is required to make its online portal freely available, and GPO is required to preserve information in its digital storage facility, GPO will still need help. GPO can't do this all by itself. It needs partners. The sheer scale of digital government information is immense. Today, there is more born digital government information produced in a single year than all the paper and ink government publications accumulated in the FDLP over 200 years. That is one of the reasons that many government information specialists advocate changing Chapter 19 to broaden the scope of the FDLP to specifically include digital government information. This would make it possible for FDLP libraries to select to receive digital documents. That would make it possible for them to build their own digital collections and build their own digital services aimed at specific communities of users. The law already establishes FDLP libraries as partners in preservation and partners in free public access. The law just needs to be updated to make it clear and unambiguous for digital information. So, what can we do? Many of us who are longtime government information specialists are urging that any changes to Title 44 should explicitly address four principles. These are, one, privacy of the users of government information. Two, the preservation of the information itself. Three, free access and free use of the information. And four, the modernization of the scope of information covered by Chapter 19 for the digital age. We believe that the law provides the big picture framework for ensuring principles like these. changing the law should not focus on small short-term tactics, but on big principles. The law provides the foundation for tactics and policies that do change over time. My colleagues have recommended 6 specific changes to Title 44 that reflect these 4 principles, and you can read our specific recommendations at freegovinfo.info. I urge you to think about these principles, and as you hear proposals from library groups and from Congress, ask yourself how proposals will affect the principles. And there are 2 things you can do personally if you agree with the principles. First, I urge you to sign a petition that we've created at change.org. The petition will go directly to the House Committee on Administration and to GPO. Just go to freegovinfo.info and follow the sign the petition link. Second, you can write your own letter or urge your library director to write a letter to GPO and the committee. To help you do that, 2 university librarians have shared the letters they have sent and invite you to use their letters as models for your letters. You can find copies of their letters at freegovinfo.info. In conclusion, this has been a very brief overview of a complex set of issues. When you go to the freegovinfo.info website, you'll see a series of recent posts that will give you all the background and details you need to understand these issues. I hope you'll do that, and I appreciate your attention to these issues as they are very important. Thank you.
This call is being recorded.
Thank you so much, Jim, for that incredibly valuable and brief, but chock full of information presentation. We had a few questions that members of the DLF Interest Group on Records, Government Records, Transparency, and Accountability had hoped you could answer for us. So if it's okay, I'd love to ask you a few of these questions.
Absolutely.
Cool. So one question folks had was, it seems like the press hasn't really caught on to this story yet. Like, the only place that I've heard about this looming legislative and bureaucratic change is from you guys at freegovinfo.info. And I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about why you think the press hasn't tuned into this, or whether we can anticipate some news reporting about this.
Yeah, that's right. The press really hasn't picked up on it. There was a story in Library Journal in late August. Lisa Pete did a story on it, and it's a pretty good story. It's worth reading. But in general, it hasn't caught the attention of the library press, much less the popular press yet. Part of the reason is that it's kind of an obscure part of the law, printing in documents. I mean, who would be interested in that, really? It doesn't sound interesting. Doesn't sound sexy. But part is that GPO has kept a low profile. It did not announce that it wanted to change Title 44 at the spring ALA meeting. It waited till after the meeting to make the announcement. And I think government documents in general has a kind of special place in the minds of most librarians as being sort of esoteric and even difficult. So it's not a sexy sounding topic, and it hasn't had a lot of publicity yet. Until January of this year, most people took government information for granted, too. I think they thought everything's online, and they didn't really worry about whether it would be there tomorrow. One change that we saw was that with a new president, academics in particular realized that the government could take things offline if it wanted to, and data that academics relied on was at risk. And there was no law that prevented the government from taking information offline. And that led to a rush to rescue government data and copy it to non-government controlled servers. What most librarians haven't realized yet is that under the current law, access to all digital government information, not just academic research data, is controlled by the government. The government can legally charge for access or take things offline or alter information or just lose the information out of neglect. The law allows all that. And I think if more people understood that and understood what was at stake, there would be more information in the press. But we haven't seen that yet.
Okay. Thanks for that context. kind of scary to me that we don't realize all of this is so precarious. Another question folks had was if you can talk a little bit about the GPO's refusal to deposit digital materials in official depository libraries. Can you talk a little bit about what the response of depository libraries has been to these developments?
Sure. I think, again, you need sort of an historical context here. The policy was developed in 1993. That's what, more than almost 25 years ago. We're talking the earliest days of the web. Agencies, government agencies, were using dial-up bulletin boards and just starting to move their stuff to the web. Yahoo and Amazon were brand new. This was before iTunes or Skype or WordPress. Even MySpace hadn't been started yet. This was 2 years before the formation of the Digital Library Federation. The Internet Archive and the Wayback Machine was still 3 years away. This was 3 years before the Open Archives Initiative, 4 years before DSpace, 7 years before Fedora, 9 years before Google Books. HathiTrust was 15 years away. It was before the California Digital Library or the Digital Public Library of America. It was a long time ago in Internet time. It was a time when libraries were not equipped or staffed or prepared to take on digital preservation or to build digital collections or to create digital services. And most FDLP libraries were happy that someone else was going to offer to shoulder the responsibility. It sounded like a win-win. And in fact, many libraries are still happy to avoid new costs and responsibilities, but we've seen over the last 25 years a lot of evolution of digital libraries. And even in the absence of support from GPO, there are 30 or 40 libraries today that are part of a government documents locks project. That's locks, L-O-C-K-S-S, lots of copies, keep stuff safe. That government documents locks project preserves everything in GPO's online repository in those libraries. And many libraries are doing their own web scraping of government domains. And surveys of FDLP libraries have revealed that there are literally hundreds of libraries that are today willing to accept deposit of digital government information. So times have changed a lot, but GPO's attitude toward digital deposit and partnering with FDLP libraries is stuck in the past, in my opinion.
Okay, thanks.
Since your question?
Yeah, totally. So do you have a sense of how fast this legislation or changes to Title 44 is moving? Like, what do you think the timeline is? Somebody in the DLS was wondering if it's like going to be a few years before we see movement on this, or is it a couple of months? How do you anticipate this moving forward?
Well, I've only heard sort of rumors, but the things that I have heard are that the Committee on House Administration is very anxious to do something and do it quickly. In fact, I've heard that they want to have hearings and actions and a draft bill this month. GPO, on the other hand, isn't going to even start discussing it until October or November. I forget when it has its meeting of the Depository Library Council, DLC. So I think things in Congress are moving faster than they are in the library community. And so we really need to be on top of it more quickly than GPO or the library community is so far.
And is this the committee that's anxious to do something quickly as a House committee?
Yes, it's the House Committee on Administration, which is one of the two committees that has jurisdiction over parts, over GPO, really. And the House Committee on Administration is particularly interested in the issue because, of course, a lot of the information that GPO publishes digitally and in print is congressional information. It's things like the congressional record and congressional hearings. And Congress is interested in making sure that they have to pay as little money as possible for that information.
Okay, interesting. Great, that's really useful. Somebody wanted to know something about whether data rescue efforts could be useful in this area, or people were thinking, well, can we just scrape some data and fix the problem? And I wonder if you can speak a little bit about that as a proposal.
Sure. The data rescue efforts have been great, and web scraping and web harvesting efforts are good. And there have been a lot of benefits created by those. And in addition to the data rescue efforts that happened this year after the new presidential administration started, there have also been over the last, I think it's four presidential transitions, there may be more than that, there have been end-of-term projects where just before and just after a change in presidential administration, there was an enormous scraping of the .gov and .mil domains. There's also, of course, the Internet Archive, which regularly harvests information. There, individual libraries have smaller web scraping projects. Even GPO uses the Internet Archive to do specific web harvesting kinds of things. So there's a lot that's going on with those. But all of those efforts have a lot of drawbacks, in my opinion. First of all, most of them are volunteer efforts. All of the data rescue efforts were volunteer and had no funds, really. They were either unfunded or underfunded. A lot of these are one-time efforts. Also, web scraping has its own limitations. Web scraping can't get at everything, particularly data sets that are not publicly available on the web but that drive dynamic web pages. And even when web scraping finds a page, it may not be able to collect all the information that's essential to preserve the information on that page adequately. Web pages are very complex these days, and web scraping technology has to rush to catch up with it. So although web scraping and data rescue are good things and need to continue, we need, I think, to build preservation and long-term access into the system itself. We need to get government agencies to create preservable digital objects. We need to get agencies to recognize the value of their own information and want to preserve it. And we need digital deposit into FDLP. We need many libraries working together to provide not just disk storage, which is what a lot of these data rescue kind of efforts do, but digital services directed to the needs of specific communities of users. And changing Title 44 can enable and encourage and even require a lot of that.
Okay, thanks. That's really helpful. And then finally, other than signing petitions and writing letters, is there anything else that members of the Digital Library Federation can do to support a strong Title 44 and the chapters that you specifically highlighted?
Well, I think activism is extremely important, and I think signing the petition and writing letters and making sure that your voice is heard is very important. There is lobbying going on right now, and my understanding is that a lot of the lobbying that's going on is being done by some very large libraries that are very influential and have good contacts in Washington. And a lot of their focus is, in my opinion, directed at the paper collections that are already in big libraries, big FDLP libraries. A lot of libraries see that as wasted space because those collections, those paper collections in those libraries are not being used because they've never been adequately publicized or cataloged. And some of them now are in remote storage and things like that. And so these big influential libraries are lobbying Congress to let them discard those collections, and there are various kinds of proposals that would allow them to do that. Apart from whether or not that's a good idea, I think it's a bad idea, and we could talk about that in a long time. It's a focus on the past. It's a focus on the small historic collection, which is static and not growing. The big issue is the digital government information, which is growing hundreds of times faster than the paper collections ever grew. And we need to focus on that, and we need to make sure that Congress understands the importance of that to all libraries, not just FDLP libraries, and to the general public. And I don't think Congress does yet. I heard about one conversation recently where some of the people involved in Congress, some of the congressional staff, were surprised to hear libraries talking about the interest in digital. Because I think most of what they've heard is from big libraries that are talking about paper collections and not from all of us who are interested in the future of digital preservation and access, long-term access to digital, born digital government information. So becoming informed of what the issues are, staying focused on the principles rather than the short-term tactics, and being active in making sure Congress knows what we're interested in are the three things that I think are most important today.
Excellent. That's very helpful. Does anybody else have any questions they want to ask before we conclude?
Nope, none for me. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
So informative. How much?
All right, great. So thanks, everybody. And see you in the streets, I guess.
Okay. Don't forget to go to freegovinfo.info. There's lots of information there.